Claire, and you're listening to the Mother Love Podcast, a show where we talk about the journey of parenting. This is a space where guests open their hearts, gather their courage, and tell the truth about what it means to care for these messy and delightful little ones in today's big, wide, and often overwhelming world. We talk about the pressures, the steep learning curves, and the bittersweet reality of watching our children grow. Parenting asks us to be willing to feel it all. Celebration and grief, joy and anguish, fear and courage. So take a breath, let these stories wash over you, and show yourself a little love.
Hi, Mother Love listeners. I'm here with Ashley Fish today. And Ashley, I'll just give a little background on how Ashley and I know each other. So Ashley's husband works still with my ex-husband, and we knew each other like from that, just from the engineering firm. And we were just talking, and I was at Ashley and Nick's wedding seven years ago now.
Yep.
But interestingly, because of, you know, Phil and I split, like we have been kind of out of touch some years.
Yeah.
And so what's been interesting about being back in conversation with you is we haven't known each other as moms, really.
No, not at all. Yeah.
I mean, you knew me as like a young mom pretty well. And I think when I was going through some of my struggles with that, like I remember you being there.
We were able to chat about that.
Yeah.
But that was years ago.
It was a long time ago. So it's been cool to be able to talk about like what your motherhood journey has been like and mine a little bit.
Yes.
And we have some overlap, even though super different stories, some overlap, which we'll talk about today. But just a little bit more. Your son Barrett is now 5.
Yes.
Your daughter Ainsley is 3.
Yep.
And you are teaching first grade?
Yes, I am.
At Jim Darcy School.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that, like, some people you meet. I think when we met, were you teaching kindergarten?
No, I have taught.
You were always first grade.
I have taught first grade for, this is my 16th year.
Yeah. But everyone always says about early education, like that takes a special kind of person.
Yeah.
And when I met you, I was like, oh my gosh, like you're the kind of first grade teacher who really, I think, probably makes a huge impact on kids because of your heart.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And
thank
just your energy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're very kind. I think every level takes a special type of person. Like I definitely found where I was meant to be with those littles. But yeah, I think any level, it just takes just the right human. But
yeah,
I hope I make a difference in their lives. They impact my life in a very positive way. So
yeah,
I love going to work every day. So I feel very fortunate for that.
So. Yeah, that's so good. So, okay. So that's just a little bit of backstory before we dive in fully. There are so many things we want to talk about today, but I kind of want to start like at the beginning, which begins with your pregnancy with Barrett. And just tell me a little bit about how that went and some of the pieces of it that were unexpected.
Okay. Yes. Really, I guess, quote unquote, normal pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Everything went great. Very exciting. And then like at 35 weeks, just started, you know, having like, I lost my mucus plug and then went to the doctor and I was actually dilated like 3 centimeters. And she just said I could still work, but limit my exercise and things like that. So, and then that very night my water broke. So
I was going to say exercise and work at 3 centimeters dilated.
Yeah,
like, no thanks.
Yeah. Right. Well, I walked, my exercise at that point was just walking our dog, but he's big and I would walk him for a couple miles and stuff. So, but then again, like teaching first grade, you're up and down and all over the place. So yeah. So I was, you know, new to this whole pregnancy thing and I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine. Thinking it's just totally going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then I just will never forget like standing up and Nick and I were going to go to the grocery store and I'm like, oh my gosh, I think my water just broke. And Nick's very conservative and like, let's wait and see. And we'll go to the doctor and I'm like, well, we should call our parents. We're going to have a baby. And he's like, well, let's just wait and see. I'm like, honey, my water broke.
Like this is really a negotiable point in time.
This is happening.
Yeah.
So, and then
we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll just see. And I'm like, well, no. And I think that just both kind of caught us both off guard. But in a very exciting way, And then we, you know, have our little peanut, and he's just so precious and so cute and just tiny, just like 5'12".
Yeah. Were you scared about it being early?
You know, a little bit, but I think when you're in that moment, it's like, I think being a first time mom, you're just like
excited,
yeah. Nervous, and you kind of go through the motions. Yeah. Like, I'm just like, just tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Yeah.
We're going to have a baby.
Right.
Not necessarily thinking about, oh, his lungs might not be developed yet. Yeah. And we are 5.5 weeks early. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and doctors and nurses, they keep their cool really well. So they didn't seem nervous. So I didn't feel like I had anything to be nervous about. You know, he had a hard time latching. So it was just like, you have this baby, he's adorable, precious, wonderful. And then it's like, oh, and you got to feed him. Mm-hmm. And there was just all that pressure of like, he's not latching, he's not doing all of the right things. So yeah. We're, you know, Nick was syringe feeding him, I'm pumping, we have like this bulb that's dripping and trying to supplement with while he's nursing, and just really overwhelming.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he had jaundice. That was mm-hmm. kind of, you know, a buzzword you hear often right. with babies right. and newborns. So mm-hmm. We get sent home after, gosh, I think we were in the hospital 4 days, and we get sent home, and, you know, he was doing everything that a normal baby does, but his jaundice kind of started, he started getting more yellow. So mm-hmm. we took him into the hospital to get in his little blue light bed. Mm-hmm. And the nurse had kind of noticed that something was off with his breathing, and he was just pausing while breathing, like for 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. And there was just a lot of like observing him. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of looking at them like, what is going on? Should I start freaking out? Is this normal?
Yeah.
Nick went down to park the vehicle. He came back up, and it was just kind of like,
whoa,
chaos.
Oh, man.
And just these, like, just immediately that fear of, wait a second.
Yeah.
We just came up here to be in the,
right.
under blue lights and right. get rid of yellow and
totally.
Go home.
Yep.
So like, that was really, really scary.
Yeah. It's and shocking.
Yeah.
Right? You kind of go into shock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, you sit there, and I just remember nurses trying to talk to me, and I look back on that time, and I'm like, I want to apologize to all of those nurses, because I'm sure I was just terrified and not really responsive, and which they understand.
Yeah.
But I just remember having that moment of, we have to get him out of here.
Yeah.
Like, it just not necessarily equipped for what is going on. And the doctor on call was very receptive to that. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's Valentine's Day, winter, like emergency travel only, winter storm in Helena, basically across the state. And we have to wait for Missoula to drive from Missoula, their ambulance, to Helena to pick him up. So like,
and then back to
and
Missoula.
Then back to Missoula.
Oh my God.
Because a helicopter couldn't take off in that weather. So, you know, there's that panic, just utter panic. And yeah, just
yeah.
fear. You're
okay.
just, yeah.
Let's just pause for a second, because I mean, holy buckets. This is where the thing happens, right? When you have this beautiful, peaceful, almost like softer on the edges lens of what the first few days home mm-hmm. with your baby is going to look like.
Yeah.
What meeting your baby is going to look like. What breastfeeding your baby is going to look
right.
like for the first time. What it's going to be like to be in the hospital and have support, but be totally at peace and just absorbed
right.
in that love.
Right.
And then when things start to go like the opposite of all of those, not even just different,
yeah.
but like the opposite, mm-hmm. it is so hard and scary and surreal. And you're just like, wait a minute. And you go from being in control of this really safe environment mm-hmm. for your baby to all of a sudden everything is chaos. Nothing
yeah.
is in your control.
Right.
Like, you have all kinds of input now that you have to consider from other people.
Absolutely.
And there's just like so much. And I can't even imagine what that must have been like in terms of like, okay, and now we're in an emergency situation right. In the middle of a winter storm.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I remember telling the doctors, I will pay $1 million to get him where he needs to go.
Yep.
And Nick being like, Ashley. And I'm like, no, this is our,
yeah.
because your motherly instincts yes. are just like ferocious, right? Now
right.
you have this little human that,
right.
you know, it's like, he wasn't supposed to come this early and nope. now he's here and he's having problems. I will do anything.
And
anything.
Money makes no
yeah,
sense.
Right.
Like
right.
you're like, yeah. oh,
yeah.
okay.
It's like, whatever. Like, we'll figure it out later.
Right. Like I'm supposed to make a decision based on finances
yes. yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it is real,
right.
but I remember feeling the same way. Like I'm
yeah.
not going to not get
right.
Kyla what she needs
exactly.
because we're worried about it being expensive.
Right.
Like that's
yeah.
not a thing
yeah,
right now.
Absolutely.
There are plenty of people with money
yep.
and if I have to show up
yep.
at a billionaire's door and beg them to pay
absolutely.
My hospital bills, I'll
absolutely.
Do that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so it's
yeah.
that's a crazy feeling.
Yeah. Just that innate feeling as a mom that
yep.
I will do anything.
Yeah.
Anything
yeah.
to help my child right now.
Yeah.
So yeah. That was my kind of introduction. Like they're just there wasn't, I mean, we had some really sweet moments when we had first gotten home with him before Valentine's Day. But like, also we weren't necessarily ready for him cause he came early.
Right.
So it was like, we got home and we're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was hard and it was very chaotic and it was stressful. But I will say the minute we actually got to Community Medical, I remember just walking in and like the calmness
yep.
that there was.
Yeah.
And that immediately helped me like kind of take a breath.
Yep.
Still didn't change the situation.
Right.
But it kind of helped me put my life together a little bit and just feel a little bit more confident in our situation.
Right.
And just because you're told like, you know, Community Medical is a great hospital. You're told all these things. So it's like, okay, we're at the right place.
Right.
I feel good. And just their staff, I think is their nurses and just their doctors have seen this more.
Yeah.
So they
right.
were able to kind of explain, we're going to do this and this mm-hmm. and this, and this is what's happening and this mm-hmm. is why, and we're going, you know, so it was helpful to, even though I caught like, you know, words of what they said.
It's more just these people know what to do.
Yeah, it felt like they had a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that was comforting.
Totally.
Because when we talk about things being out of our control, which is really hard as a mom, to feel like somebody knows what they're going to do and they are in control of your child,
right.
then you're like, okay, I can buy in a little bit,
yep.
whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just, you know, and that was a good time for just Nick and I. Like we had a room right next door to his PICU room.
Yep.
And just for us to kind of be there for each other and just kind of try to sort through it together.
Yep.
And yeah, it just, I look back on that time and there's so many things that I wish I would have done. I wish I would have been in Barrett's room with him more, but like just walking towards his room and seeing him hooked up to all the machines, just like it crushed my soul.
Yeah.
So I wish I would have been stronger. You know, I look back on that time, it wouldn't have changed. He would have been fine. He is great. He's just a wild boy, 5 year old now.
Yeah.
But I look back on that time and I just wish that I wish I could have been stronger. I just didn't have it in me.
Mm-hmm.
I made it into
yeah.
his room, but I just remember like,
I know,
thinking I wish I would have just been in there
every
single day or all hours of the day, every minute.
Which is interesting because okay, here's what's really crazy is like when we had our experience
mm-hmm.
with Kyla,
mm-hmm.
we were at community.
Yeah.
She was in the PICU, you know, and I can relate so much to that feeling of like, I mean, it's still terror. Like deep down, it's still terror, but you know that you're in the best possible hands that you could be.
Absolutely.
And like, it's like, you don't, like, I remember, like, really want all the information, but I need all the information.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And all these different like procedures that they had to do. Like, I just remember being like, why my baby?
Right.
You know, and like she was so tiny, and I remember them putting her like on the giant x-ray
yes.
table with yeah. like the machine that was like 5 times bigger than me,
uh-huh.
you know, and just like, and yeah. just being like, what is happening?
Right.
like mm-hmm. that's like, we're supposed to be home at, you know, home at a rocking,
yeah.
in the rocking chair.
Absolutely.
And like, you know,
yeah.
And I look back and I think I probably should have given myself more of a break. Like, I was like so stubborn about not leaving mm-hmm. Kyla's side.
Yeah.
That like, but I was, you know, we were 8 weeks in.
Right.
So it okay. was also yeah. like you were just processing like just having given birth
Absolute.
And just having like
yeah.
just the utter shock of like the immediacy timeline wise.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I know what it's like to like see your baby hooked up to everything
oh, yeah.
and not it's, be able to hold them because they're so
yeah.
tangled up mm-hmm. in cords and wires, and there's
oh,
a machine
yeah.
telling you every flippin' second
oh man
what's going
the
on
machines.
And you know mm-hmm. oh my gosh. So and I just remember learning like all of these things that I never wanted to know.
Absolutely.
Like so
way
quickly.
Too much
way
too much.
And there were moments where like the people caring for her, like they were amazing
mm-hmm.
but there were moments where I remember like I remember them trying to put in like a catheter and it wasn't going well. And she was obviously like
oh,
screaming
yeah.
in pain.
Absolutely.
And like your mama instinct, like I wanted to like punch everyone
yeah,
in the
it's
face,
like,
take her,
leave her alone
and leave, like, and go. But like, you have to stand there and just trust that like,
absolutely.
This has to happen.
Yeah.
But it
yeah.
is excruciating.
It really is.
And I remember feeling like, just take me instead.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
just like
absolutely.
Put me in her place. Take
exactly.
draw my blood.
Exactly.
Put like
yeah.
all this pain that you're putting on. And it was like this interesting understanding of a lot of things, but
absolutely
that like sacrificial, just like,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it,
you know,
it is amazing just how instantaneous
yeah.
you have that, like mm-hmm. just take away every ounce of their pain and their struggles, give it to me and I will be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's just the helplessness
and the feeling of like absolute gratitude
mm-hmm.
that
oh.
like that you're not at home.
Absolutely.
Trying to
yeah.
like fix this on your own.
Seriously.
Or not knowing
yes.
what's going on or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Oh yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I'm so grateful we ended up in
right
at St. Peter's like for jaundice. Like if
yeah.
we wouldn't have
right.
gotten up there, I, you know, and you hate to look back on that and think, you know, would he be here?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I just, it's really hard to go to that spot. But at the same time, it's like, I do have to believe that those things happened mm-hmm. for a reason
yeah.
to help him make it through.
And like you said before, to help prepare
us yeah. for our second little honey.
Yeah.
I mean, that's community medical. I just have so much love for.
Same.
And just not only for them helping both of my children, but what they did for me.
Yeah.
As
Amen.
Just a mom and the love and grace.
Yeah.
That they gave us
yeah.
as parents.
Yeah.
It just, yeah, I adore them
yeah.
so much. And I know that there's other hospitals that
right.
probably are very similar, but
yeah,
I'll tell you what, nurses.
Oh my gosh.
God bless their souls.
Shout
there.
Out to nurses.
Yeah.
I know when we talked before, you and I talked about this too, but just heroes. Like,
mm-hmm.
like
Absolutely.
You said, like for, you know, they're just at community for me, they were like, they were so on top of things. But like you said, like the warmth and communication, like, I mean, they would come in and I would be falling
absolutely
apart.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
And like certain nurses would just look me in the eye and be like, of course you're falling
yeah,
apart.
Absolutely.
Like, this is so
mm-hmm.
scary and so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, like they were just so supportive and they didn't have to be.
They didn't.
We had like a few nurses who weren't.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
'cause
you always have.
And the difference it made, like, it was like I was on edge the whole time because I was like, if you don't like, if you won't ever make eye contact with me, if right. you don't care about any of my questions, then right. like, are you also giving like half your care right. and attention to my exactly. baby because you just want to make it through exactly. your shift and you're retiring mm-hmm. in 6 months or
yeah,
whatever?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Or you
right.
just want to have your next yeah. smoke break? Like, I would be like just counting the minutes until like absolutely. The morning nurses.
Right. Absolutely. Well, yeah. and I think that was something that also like, I took from Barrett's experience with Ainsley, like when we had one nurse that was kind of like that. Mm-hmm. And I think I was more prepared to advocate for us
right.
and just saying,
totally,
you know, I'm not feeling
yeah.
the love and the caring from this person.
Yeah.
She may just be having a bad day, but I need better.
Yeah.
And you know, they made
it. Ainsley needs better.
And like, Ainsley absolutely yeah.
you learn
better.
Not to be yeah. like the quote unquote good patient.
Right. Right. Cause I have a really hard time. I like to be the good patient. I don't like to cause waves. I mean, and I'm even still learning this through our journey with Ainsley.
Right.
It's, you know, people are like, well, you, that's your right. You mm-hmm. can advocate yep. for that. And it's like, I know, but I just don't want to cause a problem.
Totally. I hear that. Mm-hmm. I hear that. You mm-hmm. don't want to feel like you're being confrontational right. or challenging
right. exactly.
someone, but then it's like that thing as a mom where you like have to put aside your own
absolutely you
like
do.
Ego and mm-hmm. your own like wanting to please mm-hmm. people or whatever, because yep. there's too much at stake.
Absolutely.
Right?
And totally.
And I think that's part of our journey was like that did happen with a doctor and it caused things to go off the rails mm-hmm. because it became about
yeah.
like trusting someone we shouldn't have trusted
right.
and that I had the instinct not to.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
anyways, I always like am reluctant to be like jump in with my own
yeah,
stuff,
no,
but this
absolutely.
Is one area where like we yeah. were at the same place.
Absolutely.
So I can't not,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you know, and just anyone who's ever had to see their baby hooked up to things and mm. it's just really hard. So I think it's good to talk
yeah,
about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. yeah. So then, okay. Before we go on to the next part of the story, just tell me about Barrett as a kid. What is what's he like now, 5 years later? What does he love? What's his personality
gosh.
Like?
He is just such a love. Oh. God, just even thinking about him, I just adore
Yeah.
adore the little man he's become. He's just started kindergarten and I feel like all of a sudden he's just like so big
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
He loves anything sports related. Just mm-hmm. he is all boy, but then he has just like this little arts and crafts side of him. Like he chooses that in kindergarten when they have free choice, like he wants to create. And
that's
I just
cool.
I love that so much about him. And you know, he's just excited about life.
Yeah.
And that's all I really could ever hope for.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just got so much joy and he looks forward to all of the things, you
yeah.
know, family time, a basketball game, practice, you know, right now Nick's has deer in the garage and he wants to be a part of Nick, like, you know,
yeah.
getting the meat off the deer.
Yeah.
And he's just buzzing with excitement.
That's so
90%
cool.
of the time. Yeah, he's just awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He's just a joy to just have and just such a sweet, kind soul. Like it just sometimes it amazes me the kindness that he has in him, and it just reminds me as a first grade teacher, like these kiddos innately just have that kindness and that empathy and
yeah.
they have that,
yeah.
you know, and I just, and then you look at the world sometimes and
right.
it's like, what, where did that go?
Yeah.
you know, but I love how kind and sweet he is and just thoughtful and forgiving, mm-hmm. honestly,
yeah.
Just such a little honey. And I love hearing that from his teacher. I mean, his teacher's always saying what a sweetheart he is and, you know, and that's, I just want him to be kind. You
yeah.
know, that's every time he's going out of our pod, because he comes to Jim Darcy with me and when he's walking out the door, I'm like, have a great day and be kind.
Yeah.
And I just love that he is doing that,
yeah.
you know, and he's just a happy little boy.
Yeah. yeah. And we talked about, you know, just one more thing that I'm remembering that we talked about that I think is interesting and probably common is like when that kind of medical emergency and health challenge happens when our kids are really, really little. Like you said, it was hard for you to let other people care for him.
Oh my gosh.
And I think that's very real. Like it I experienced this lack of trust and like just this absolute need for like extreme control.
Absolutely.
And I think it probably, that was like, for me, that was probably ended up being kind of harmful.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because
definitely.
Like, even with Phil, I was like, I can't, like, I can't let her out of my sight or something bad might happen. And eventually, like, I went to therapy and, you know, she was like, you have PTSD.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Watching it's all those so things real. Go down. Yeah. Like, we needed to address that.
Yeah.
But
And see, I didn't do the therapy thing until after Ainsley, but honestly, looking back, I mean, it was very contentious between Nick and I because it's like we worked so hard to get him to this spot. Like, I am going to protect him from everything, you know, and it just, and it does damage to just like your own psyche, but also your relationship with your husband or if you have other kids, you know, even friends too, to some extent, but there was definitely that struggle that I don't think I recognized until our sweet little girl came into the world, you know? So, but looking back on that, you know, I remember those conversations with Nick is like, you know, he is fine in his bed. You don't need to lay next to the crib. Right. You don't need to, you know, you don't need to be on him every second, you know? So that is real.
Yeah.
And it's not wrong. Like, it's hard to say that's wrong. Like, I can't tell any mom that that's wrong.
Nope.
You know, it's, there might be better ways about it. Mm-hmm. But I think when you're in it, we're all just doing the best that we can at that moment, you know?
And it's kind of like an unshakable force.
It is.
Because it's that instinct part. And I think that's why for me, it wasn't something that could be solved. Mm-hmm.
Right.
By me, it couldn't be solved by Phil. I think for me, the real first time I began to be open to accepting help was out of sheer desperation of sleep deprivation.
Oh yeah.
Like, my mom was like, Claire, you have to let me come and help in the night so you can sleep more than an hour at a time. Like, y'all are going downhill fast here.
Right.
You know, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But I even felt so scared and guilty, like, while I was sleeping. Like,
I'd wake up
and be like,
right.
Like, is everything okay? What, you know, which is just, I don't know. It's an interesting
dilemma. It is interesting. So much pressure that we put on ourselves to do it all.
Yeah.
And the accepting of help. Whew.
Yeah.
I've learned that. I've learned a lot about that.
Yes. And that's a cool part of your story, actually. But let's move on to Ainsley.
Sweet baby girl.
Yeah. And maybe we'll start by talking about Ainsley today. And then go, because why not?
Yeah.
We're in mom brag segment.
Oh, I know.
Let's go for it. Like, tell me about Ainsley.
Oh, she's just a little peanut. She's so sweet and, you know, loves her family. She's loves being with her pack. She kind of has been going through phases of like loving mom, loving dad, very much so in the beginning stages, total daddy's girl.
Yeah. Like, oh, funny.
She loves Nick so much. It's so sweet. But you know, she just is kind of accomplishing things at her own pace. I feel like she's doing better than we could have ever imagined, and even honestly medical professionals probably could have ever imagined right now. So we're taking that, and that's a win, and we just are enjoying every single moment with her, you know. It's just crazy to think that she's already 3 and she'll be 4 in March, and you know, it's such a joy, but it's also very scary. Just the older she gets, it's just like, you know, we have a child that statistically, you know, their life expectancy is, you know, 6. So, I mean, and with her being on the more severe range, I think, even younger than that. So it's hard to think about that, as every year that passes, it's just like, oh, I'm so happy that she's 4 and we're celebrating. But then at the same time, it's like, I want time to just slow down for fear of anything going wrong. Yeah. You know, anything can go wrong with anybody's kids at any given time. But I think having that just looming in the background is real, and it's hard. And, but just focusing on her, like, you know, just this morning, her waking up and her pigtails are all crazy and she's just chirping away and smiling. And it's like, just focusing on those moments are so important.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's just doing so wonderful. Like, I don't know. She's amazing and a blessing to our family. And, you know, she's just accepted so widely. Like, we're so fortunate to have the people in our life that just accept her for who she is and, you know, support our family. And, she's just a little rock star.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll have to rewind.
Okay.
And talk about, you know, I mean, that's like an interesting place to start, I guess, because all of a sudden people know these pieces that are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just so hard. But so
very
let's
hard.
Talk about how Ainsley came into the world. And, you know, I think we could probably begin with the ultrasound that sort of changed everything.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So 20-week ultrasound. We're, you know, find out we're having a baby girl. Super excited. You know, I always thought I was going to be a boy mom. So I was like, but then I remember being at that and I'm like, I know she's a girl.
Yeah.
I'm actually really excited to have a girl. This will be interesting. Mm-hmm. And then we find out and it's just exciting. And I remember having the doctor visit, just going over that ultrasound. And, you know, the ultrasound tech had said on the way out, hey, I didn't get really great images of her brain. Just if they would call you back, no stress. I'm like, okay, fine. We're having a girl. Yay. Walk it out.
Yeah.
Then, you know, a couple weeks later, we meet with our doctor and, you know, they're talking about these pieces of the brain that I've never heard about that, you know, we need better imaging, et cetera. You're going to see a specialist. I'm like, okay. You know, and I had gone to that doctor's appointment by myself. So I call Nick and I'm like freaking out because that's what I do. And Nick's just like, Ashley, calm down.
Any mom would freak out.
Yeah.
In this
any mom. And see, and that's what's so wonderful about Nick is, you know, I'm in this automatic panic and he is just like, Ashley, it's just more pictures. It's fine. You're going to get to see her again. Like, he's all focused on the positive, which, you know, that's
right.
You know, that's what you want to be focused on the positive. So we meet Dr. Fawcett from Community Medical and he is an amazing soul. Like, anybody that has him taking care of them through their pregnancy, you're in amazing hands. And you know, he verifies that, you know, her corpus callosum, which is the connection between the two hemispheres of the brain. He's like, I can't quite see it. It might be there. You know, we're going to need an MRI to see if we can, you know, verify if it's there or not. So I've never had an MRI before. We can't get it done in Helena. So off we go to Missoula to have an MRI. Still not very positive, not sure if it's there. So no conclusive evidence, but we continue to see him throughout pregnancy. Then we discover her ventricles are enlarged. So, you know, we keep having ultrasounds throughout and, you know, they throw out possible things that it could be, possible diagnoses. And, you know, you Google it and they're all terrifying, you know, they're all scary. And, you know, Dr. Fawcett was always very good about saying, you know, if it is this, I just want you to know, like, there's people probably walking around in the world with the same diagnosis and they don't even know it and they're totally fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you hang on to that carrot of, okay, this is going to be okay. But I would say from like 24 weeks on till delivery, I mean, it was awful.
Yeah.
It was awful. It just was scary and terrifying. And, you know, every time she moved, you're just so grateful that she's moving around in there. And, you know, ultrasounds were great because you get to see her. Yeah. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then we get faced with the choice of having her here or in Missoula. And they said, you know, I think she's looking healthy. I think you'd be fine having her in Helena, and I'm just like, you know, we've been to community medical. We had a great experience. Let's just do it. So we go the week before, and like this whole time, you know, we have a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
So we're like going through this, and it's
icky. Who you're afraid to be away from.
Yeah. Who you're terrified of leaving. And I mean, thank goodness for our parents. Like both of our parents are amazing, and at the drop of a hat would come. And if we had to go to Missoula for an appointment, they'd come and watch Barrett. And
right.
Just trying to keep life as normal as possible for him.
Right.
And which we did. I mean, he was fine.
Right.
He was fine.
But even just the emotional toll of
exactly.
That pull between being present with your precious little 2-year-old
absolutely.
And having just this complete terror
right.
taking place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's so...
It was really hard.
Overwhelming mm-hmm. to think about.
It is. I mean, fortunately, I will say, like, just as we talk about Ainsley in life and just the feelings, you know, it is... He kept us a little bit distracted sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it was good because life was still existing.
Totally.
Whether we were in our trauma and fear.
Right.
You know, everything else was still going.
Yeah.
So for him, I mean, it was, you had your emotions and stuff, but like sometimes you did have that distraction of just like a 2-year-old being totally hilarious,
yeah.
you know? So
which,
thank goodness for that.
Yeah. Because otherwise, if it had been your first pregnancy, you would have been just fully like obsessed and consumed
yeah.
in there.
Yeah,
would have been no reason to have to keep that in
absolutely.
Check.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's really that, I mean, that again is a blessing that mm-hmm. it was the second. So we decide to go to Missoula. We stay there for a week. My parents are watching Barrett and Helena, and he's just living his best life with grandma and grandpa. And Nick's working from the Ronald McDonald House, which is amazing. Another amazing resource for families. And then, you know, I'm just itching to have her because I want to get back to my son. You know, it's like, I want to get back to that other kiddo that I have.
Totally.
And so, you know, we ended up staying for almost an entire week and then have Ainsley on March 2nd, which I love because it's Dr. Seuss's birthday. So I just love that. And,
yeah.
you know, she's born and she's crying and she's doing all the things. And it just like, I just remember that moment of seeing Nick hold her and just like this weight, you know, because you're so scared of what is she going to come out looking like? What is she going to be? Is it going to be like Barrett, like where she's intubated and can't breathe on her own? And
right.
like all these what ifs, like these unknowns that you create and you fixate on. Yeah. And then, you know, she's crying and I mean, she latched right away and it's just like this sense of calm.
Yeah.
You know, and they allowed that. Like they had all of the NICU nurses in there. They had all the people in case but they gave us that moment of yeah. like, here's your daughter.
Yeah.
She's doing good.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
Yes.
They let us have that. And then it was, well, we are going to take her for an MRI. And they're very gentle about
right.
all these things. But,
right.
you know, and we're going to do some extra blood draws. And we're
yeah.
going to, you know. So then the whirlwind begins
yeah.
of all of the things for this little honey, you know.
Yeah.
And she is in the NICU. And things are going okay. You know, she had her MRI. Part of the connection was still there. Ventricles were still enlarged. So there's like empty space, basically. There's brain matter that wasn't developed is what
yeah.
that means,
yeah.
Which is hard to hear as a parent. But, you know, we still are holding on to Dr. Fawcett's carrot of, you know, she might just be completely fine. There's
you
people.
Have to.
Yeah, you
what
have
else
to.
Are you
That's your
do?
Survival.
Yep.
Well, she's going to be fine. And, you know, our NICU stay was wonderful because the nurses are amazing, but you know, this little honey who's barely 6 pounds, it's, you know, the blood draws and
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the feeding that kind of became an issue and then the failure to thrive that they throw at
yeah,
you and,
yeah.
and, you know, Nick has to go back to Helena because he has a job and we have a 2-year-old
right.
and, you know, so then it's like this sense of just like utter loneliness.
Yeah.
And you're not alone, but you've, it's just so heavy.
Yeah.
And I don't know, just like the nurses that kind of helped me through that and just supported me. And some of them would just come in and just like visit with me.
Yeah.
Just to kind of, you know, cause they know, they know. And you know, there's other things too. Like you walk through the NICU and you know, like I knew that there are babies that were way more severe than Ainsley, you know? Yeah. So I had that to be thankful for. I just had a lot of unknowns still. You know, her muscles were spastic. Like she kind of would keep her arms straight out and like her little hands would shake. And, you know, so that was kind of our intro to just that neuro, like this right. is a neuro thing. You know, then they start talking about doctors we're going to have to see and different specialists and, you know, this team. And it's like, okay, first step, we just got to get out of here. So we were in the NICU for 13 days. And I'm so excited that we're going to get to go home. And, you know, there's rumors of toilet paper running out and all this stuff. And I know I talked to you, like, telling Nick, check for toilet paper. If there's not toilet paper in Helena, we'll grab some in Missoula on our way home. He's like, okay, yeah, sure. Because, you know, we just have been, like, living and breathing our daughter and, like, trying to find what might be wrong and just getting her well enough to go home.
Right. And
we get home Friday the 13th. School is announced that it's closing that Sunday. And here we are in a pandemic. So I'm like, well, okay. All right. And yeah, so there's that. And
which is like, okay. Which is crazy. But one of the things that I imagine that felt like for you that was probably interesting was like, even this like global yeah. pandemic,
yeah,
like paled in comparison.
I had no idea
to what you had in front of you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And then it was all kind of still yeah. like maybe not, yeah. we don't know, yeah. but it's looking pretty bad.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Things aren't great. But you know, I wasn't looking at the news. I'm reading the updates on Ainsley's whiteboard
exactly.
and we're talking yep. like her oxygen levels and right. how many ounces she drank and weighing diapers yep. and you know, you're doing yeah. all those things. It's like,
who cares about anything
there's
else?
People sick and dying.
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, okay. And
yeah.
And I mean, I was right where I needed to be, right. but then getting home and just having that kind of slap us in the face and
totally.
It's like, and then, you know, thinking about our family, like Nick's parents had a really hard time with mm-hmm. like their, and absolutely like mm-hmm. that concern of getting sick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my parents, I'm like, I, you know, I don't want you guys to get sick. I don't want anything to happen to you. Mm-hmm. So then you have our two like foundational support people and it's like, well, we're going to protect you. So you guys got to stay put. We'll figure this out. It won't last that long. And then it does. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And really looking back on that, it was probably, you know, the silver linings of it for our family. There were a ton.
Yeah.
You know, Ainsley wasn't exposed to a lot.
Right.
You know, we didn't know what was wrong. We knew like at the further she got along in like by 4 months, it's like, okay. We have to start therapies. You know, we have there, she's not developing and progressing, meeting milestones that she should. So we got to get help. And, you know, we had that time and space to just really keep her healthy.
Right.
Do all of the things. Like we were very fortunate that we could still have therapies. You know, I only was teaching half of my students 2 days and then an online day and then the other half the other 2 days. So, you know, my exposure to germs was probably really reduced and cleaning like madness. And so like I look at that and it's like after getting a diagnosis, I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah.
Because it might have saved her life,
yeah,
honestly.
Totally.
But it was hard and lonely and just trudging through like this kind of dark space. And again, I think after having Barrett and then Ainsley, you continue to get into that like ultra protective mode yeah. of your daughter, and you're still my son, but just like kind of obsessive. Like that's all I could think about.
Yeah. The hypervigilance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that didn't bode well for
right.
our family.
Right.
Like our family unit was crumbling and I couldn't even really see that,
yeah.
you know? Or be receptive to it. Like,
totally.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Nothing can be wrong with us.
Right.
She, like, this is our honey. Like, yeah. She is having mountains to climb. And, you know, she started having seizures right before Thanksgiving. So 2020. And I just remember Nick putting me in my car with Barrett. And he's like, you go to your parents' house.
Yep.
I don't want to see you for 4 days.
Yeah.
He's like, you go.
Yeah.
I got this.
Yeah.
And I about lost my marbles.
Yeah.
But it was what he needed to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was driving him crazy for months, you know, because of my angst. And, you know, he did. He took care of her. He could do it. He did great. Mm-hmm. She was fine.
Yeah.
You know, we got through her steroid stuff and she stopped having seizures. So that was great. You know, and then we're in this Christmas season that normally is very happy. Like, that's like my happiest time. Like, I love it. And we get a call December 23rd from our pediatrician. And she just says, hey, you know, Dr. Elias is a geneticist at Chaudière and he has some of Ainsley's DNA. And he was kind of looking over, he's been following her. And there's this disorder that, or yeah, this disorder, metabolic disorder that he would like to test her for, and we'll just see. It's going to take about a month to find out. And she tells me what it is. And I'm just like, okay, all right. Well, I Google it. And
of course, yeah.
And it's just devastating.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I was just, ugh, it was just such an icky spot and it was horrible. And just going through that. And I mean, my brother and sister-in-law or future sister-in-law were there. My parents were there. And I just was like, what are we doing? Like, I can't sell it. Like, we can't be happy. Are you kidding me? This is
like the worst news you could.
Yeah. And it wasn't even for sure, but it's like, oh my gosh, this exists in the world and children have this. And why?
Yeah.
And why mine?
Yeah.
You know, and Nick and I both sit there and think we're healthy. We do all the right things. Like, what? Like, why does, why, you know? So we kind of get through December and then January we have our appointment set up. And like, I don't know what it was about that week, but I had like this sense of this euphoric feeling of she's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And then we get on our telehealth conversation, phone call with a genetic counselor from Chaudière. And you know, they're sharing with us that our daughter has this pyruvate dehydrogenase deficiency disorder. Mm-hmm. And it was just so icky.
Yeah.
And they're talking and they're telling you all the things. And
were you just like tuned out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they were so kind, just like, call us. We know you're going to have questions. They're talking to us about going to Denver and how, you know, Denver is a great hospital. They see children with this deficiency. There's this ketogenic diet that you can put her on. And I'm like, well, how many kids do they treat with this? And she says 15. And so they're supposed to be specialists in what our daughter has, and they treat 15 kids. Yeah. And it's just like, okay, you know, all right.
Yeah.
We got this. We're going to do this. We're going to go. And it's the only thing you can do. So you can't treat it, can't fix it. This ketogenic diet is considered a therapy for her condition. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we hop in our car and drive to Denver. and meet with more specialists. I mean, at that point we had a cardiologist, an endocrinologist, a neurosurgeon, a neurologist. You know, we had so many doctors already. And then we add a dietitian, another neurologist, and then a metabolic specialist. And, you know, they're talking to us and explaining all of the things that we've read online, and talking to us about Ainsley being probably more in the severe range just because of the symptoms she has had. And, you know, at that point, we're just going through the motions of this. And I just devastated, you know, just
of course,
and angry. I mean, lots of anger.
Yeah.
Lots of anger.
Have you guys had, like, was your, I mean, when Kyla was sick, like, I remember being in the hospital room and just, like, begging God to keep her alive.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious. It's like, it's almost like when you're faced with this kind of thing, like, you can't not question.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that, I, you know, and I could never, I mean, I could always hope and pray and try to be positive because that's just who I am. And, you know, I remember Nick just like saying so often, like, why would any higher power, mm-hmm. God, why would anybody do this?
Yeah.
And he's just like, I just have to think, like, did I do something that,
yeah,
that caused this to happen to her? I mean, cause you automatically
right.
turn to your, right. like, what have I done?
Right.
You know, and
because it's almost like you want to find fault within
yes.
yourself.
Oh, you do.
Because then you can explain
mm-hmm.
it and yeah. you can like,
oh yeah.
grasp like who to be mad at mm-hmm. or who, to, you know,
right.
it's like blame somehow yeah. makes it not easier, but more like it, understandable or something.
It gives you a space to direct
yes.
your anger at,
yeah.
I think. I mean, just it's human nature. Anytime
right.
something happens, we want to know why and who.
Mm-hmm.
Who can we point our finger at,
yeah.
you know? And that was something, you know, they had asked if I wanted to get genetic testing done to see if I was a carrier, because mm-hmm. women can carry it. And absolutely, they said the fact that we had a boy,
mm-hmm.
and he was fine,
mm-hmm.
regardless of all of his stuff at birth. They said it's highly unlikely that I was the carrier for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that Nick and I both were like, absolutely not.
Yeah, no way.
You know, because I told Nick and our family, like, I can't handle.
No.
If I am.
Right.
That I pass this on to her.
Of course.
But I really do think that it was a spontaneous thing. Just most boys don't survive in utero with it because it affects an X chromosome.
Yeah.
So with them only having one,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot more fatal
mm-hmm.
to boys.
Right.
So I do feel pretty solid that
yeah.
I don't. I mean, there are yeah. times that I'm like, I wonder.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I yeah. wonder, but I don't need to go there anymore.
Right.
Like,
because it's like, really, what good would it do? I mean, it would do...
No good.
No good.
It
even
just,
even if you found out, no.
Yeah.
It doesn't really change.
It doesn't change anything.
Anything.
It doesn't. And
yeah.
at that point, it's like we didn't need anything more piled on us.
Of course.
Because I just like, yeah, the world was just kind of crumbling around us.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I think once we got that diagnosis, I mean, as hard as it was and how awful, but you know what? We had one.
Right.
We knew.
Totally.
You know, and I'll never forget our pediatrician just looking at me when she was only like 3 or 4 months old and saying, Ashley, I know this is going to be hard, but we may never know what is wrong. We may never have a complete diagnosis because all of the brain stuff, her brain structure, it's like that was all... That's not a diagnosis. It's
right.
just, this is all because of something. We don't know what.
Right.
And you know, I am very grateful because it gave us a path to go.
Yeah.
Like it gave us something we could do.
Right.
You know, it's like she's been on a ketogenic diet now since March of 2021.
Right.
And again, like you hate to think about
what would have happened.
What would have happened.
Yeah.
And I think it has improved her longevity of life. I mean, she slept every 15 minutes because her body just could not create
yeah.
enough energy.
Yeah.
And what we were feeding her, like I was breastfeeding, but we had to supplement with a NeoSure because she just struggled to keep weight on.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, it's essentially was poisoning her body.
Right.
Like that's the deficiency,
right.
you know, she couldn't process
right.
anything with sugar. So, you know, I'm, in that moment, of course, and the months moving forward, it's like I didn't have that sense of peace. You know, it took a lot of counseling. Like, I did my own personal counseling. Nick and I did couples counseling, you know, antidepressants, like all of the things. Like, I had to take care of myself, you know, because the alternative wasn't pretty.
No.
You know, it wouldn't. I mean, I look back where we were and I just, and where we are now, it's like, I'm so grateful we did the hard work. It was very, very hard, and it still doesn't change Ainsley.
Right.
But it's like, we can, like, Nick and I can face it together, and we're more of a team, and that makes us better for Ainsley, and it makes us better for Barrett, and just, like, overall just better humans too, because we were going through it totally separate.
Yeah.
Which is really sad. Like, I feel so bad that...
But it's so common because...
It is.
It's so unbearably hard that...
It is.
Like, it's like you don't have the capacity for relationship with other people.
Right. Right.
You know, and I... Yeah.
Well, and I know we had talked about just, like, that forcing ourselves to be strong and we're okay. Like, even if you're not, absolutely not, but saying you're okay and not even communicating with one another... And, like, you don't want to say the words, like, is she going to die?
Yeah.
You know, what do we do?
Right.
Like, and that was, I mean, I remember saying that to Nick. And, you know, he wasn't in a place to receive it because we were just a mess. But, like, I just said, like, I think the hardest part for me is our son is going to lose a sibling.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just, like.
Right.
And. You know, and now I'm like, she's probably going to live till she's 20 or more, you know, like I have a better outlook on it now, but when you're in it, it's like you don't want to speak any of the things.
Totally.
Because it's like, you just don't want to say those things about your child, but it's a reality. And I think once we could find that, okay, counseling, and even for me to like have this person that knows nothing about me or us or anything, and to just talk about my greatest fears. Like, I'm terrified that my daughter is not going to wake up, or she's going to get sick and her body is not strong enough.
Right.
Like, to just say that and get it out, because it's hard to say that to Nick, who's going through the same thing. I'm sure having the same thoughts.
Right.
But to put that out there into a space, and how do you process that together when you're both such dark places. So,
well, and your coping mechanism, just part of your essential personality, has been up until this point staying positive, staying optimistic.
Yep. It's going
and
to be okay.
When that gets completely like taken away by this kind of a thing, it's like, what do you do? Like, then what? You know? So I can imagine. And then we talked about too, like the beauty of finally saying these out loud is like, yes, it's so painful to acknowledge, but you don't have to be alone in your pain
anymore. Absolutely.
And the only other person who can really understand your pain is Nick, right?
Is Nick.
So
it
both things make sense to me. It makes sense to me that there would be like a divide at first. And then it makes sense to me that once you came back, like that type of compassion, empathy, and support for each other is like so crucial.
Right. It is. And I'm probably like the worst. I mean, Nick is so, he's so good. Like I'm just like, push through. I'm just going to push through. I'm going to get through this. It's going to be fine. And even still, like, he catches me and he's like, you just have to calm down. Like, just let's talk, you know, you don't, like, you're not in this alone.
Yeah.
Just talk to me about it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so, and now I'm better at listening now. Mm-hmm. I was told that I have to, you know, listening and hearing and taking it in and receiving it.
Yeah.
Versus just dismissing it. Like,
well,
I think
before it felt like a threat.
It did.
To everything you knew.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it just, I mean, I had to grow so much, and it was so hard. And I mean, we're still having to grow, and learn and navigate.
And your kids get to watch you do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah.
Your kids get to see you struggle and get through it. Mm-hmm. And they get to see you guys yeah. support each other. And right. like, that's so huge. Mm-hmm. It's so yeah. huge oh, yeah. for kids to know that like, you know, if you and I had like not addressed these things,
right.
I would have inadvertently taught my kids like you just power through.
Yeah, exactly. It's
hard,
true.
Hard stuff comes. You don't yeah. really acknowledge it. You don't really feel it. You don't really deal with it.
Right.
You just power through.
Exactly.
And like when that stuff gets challenged in us, it's not for, it's for a reason.
It is. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm sitting here like I teach kids how yeah. to get work through problems
right?
all day long. Yeah. But I won't take space and time yes. for myself to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so it just, yeah. And I mean, that's another thing too. It was just like that acceptance of help.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I still struggle with it. Like one of my best friends is watching my kids right now and like, that's hard for me.
Yes.
And I tell her that like, it's hard. And she's like, why?
Yeah. I'm the same way.
You know, but it's like, it's just something I've learned to accept it
yeah.
more.
Yeah.
I might not like it.
Yeah.
I might have a hard time with yeah. it, but it just, without that, I know what I can turn into and
yes.
I know what the damage it can do to just me,
right.
you know, and then I'm not my best person.
Yeah. But I think we want to be able to do it all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all of it. All the things.
Not only because like it's a cultural and societal like expectation and false, you know, thing mm-hmm. to chase, this idea of like just never running out of energy
yeah,
and
right.
being perfect yeah. and like being able to do everything. But like when that actually really sinks in as impossible
mm-hmm.
like, and if we keep trying to strive for that,
right.
then we are actually failing our families
absolutely.
And failing our children.
Absolutely.
And then it's like, we're forced to be like, okay, well, if it's actually impossible,
right.
then I will have to accept help.
Right.
And the hardest thing for me is every single time I accept help, I'm admitting that I can't do everything.
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely.
Which is actually like pretty selfish when
yeah.
like
well,
of
right.
me
yeah.
is
yeah.
to think
yeah.
that like,
oh,
I
yeah.
can do everything. So therefore like,
yeah.
no, thank you.
Yeah.
And I had to learn when I started accepting help, I had to learn to switch the words, I'm so sorry mm-hmm. to just thank you.
Yeah. To just thank you. Exactly.
Like that, instead of like, I'm so sorry that you have to do this
yeah.
for us. Like
yes.
I still struggle with that.
I know.
And my mom's always like, I'm glad to help. And I realized that it was like when I was saying, I'm so sorry and making it all about like me and my deficiency mm-hmm. that I perceived, it was actually taking away the joy of the people who wanted to help me.
Who wanted to do it.
Because they saw me
right.
struggle more.
Right.
Like I still had to accept their
yeah.
self
yeah.
help. But now that I'm just like, thank you. I couldn't do this without you.
Right. Oh yeah.
It's like, it gives them a sense of like joy and
yes.
validation because
validates them.
They want to
mm-hmm.
be part of this
absolutely.
Team.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's been a huge, like, that's still a challenge that I face
yeah.
all the time, but it has mm-hmm. changed everything just
yeah.
to look at it that one
it
shift.
Does.
Yeah.
Well, and I do feel like in society we say we're sorry all the time.
Yeah.
And Nick had seen something about like approaching things as being grateful. Like if you're running a couple minutes late, instead of saying I'm sorry for being late, say thank you for waiting.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm
yeah.
like, huh, just a little turn.
Ew.
Like, yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
I know I try my darndest to, I mean, I know I tell my mom all the time, I couldn't do this without you.
Yeah.
I could, and I mean, I couldn't do it without my colleagues, like my school. Like
yeah.
I look at all of the support that they have given us.
Right.
And I mean, Nick's office, like
right.
I just.
And I know, yeah, I know you've talked about that part of Ainsley's story being that being such a blessing to your family because you have been able to like cultivate this amazing community
mm-hmm.
of people.
Oh, huge.
And you get to see how much they light up when they get to see Ainsley.
Oh, absolutely.
And that is like such a beautiful thing because if Ainsley wasn't in the world, then all these people that you've grown so close to and who have, it's been such a part of their heart to be able to be a part of Ainsley's life and a part of your guys' family.
Yeah.
That is sort of like a, I don't know, it's always hard to say like silver lining with things like this.
But it is.
But I do know that you guys hold on to that as like a really like bright spot in some of your hardest times.
Oh yeah. Well, and that's some days that is what gets us through.
Yeah.
You know, cause not all days are sunshine and butterfly. I mean, most days aren't. It's like, oh my gosh, she's been crying for 2 hours. What do we do? Mm-hmm. She can't talk. She, you know, it's hard, but it's just like, you know, having my friend come and bring me coffee and watch my kids so I can have a couple hours, you know, to take care of me. It's, you know, it's those are things that just we don't lose sight of and never will. And just, and I don't think most people realize what a difference it actually does make for us.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't think they. Maybe they do.
I hope they do. I was going to argue.
I hope they do.
I think they do.
Okay.
Because that's part of knowing you guys.
Yeah.
You know, and I, another thing I kind of wanted to talk about like before we wrap up, because when you and I talked about it before, I think that a lot of maybe listeners and a lot of people who have kids don't know what to do in situations where they see a kiddo like Ainsley and she's built different and she behaves differently because of who she is and how her body works.
Right.
And, you know, I've said to you before, like, even to this day, sometimes I don't know the right things to say to my kids or how to teach them to be respectful, but not like look away immediately whatever. And so I thought like you have kind of a cool story about that,
you know, and that is hard because Ainsley on the outside, she looks very normal. Mm-hmm. You know, she has AFOs, she cannot walk, you know, so she's in a stroller. She still is bottle fed, but you know what? She feeds herself. So for us, like when she's still feeding herself, but you know, when I'm in an airport holding a 3-year-old, giving her a body or a bottle, I get looks and it's okay. Mm-hmm. And I know I've shared with you, like I'm an educator and I don't know without Ainsley what I would even say. And even with Ainsley, I don't know, you know, not necessarily anything. You don't have to say anything, you know, but you don't have to stare. But I, you know, I have two different situations. Like I remember being in an airport and a gentleman approached me and talked about, he was asking about Ainsley's AFOs, what they were. And that just started this whole conversation. And he was so interested and wanted to talk about Ainsley and wanted to learn about her deficiency and such a kind man.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually appreciate, like, I didn't realize how I kind of just tried to tuck myself away in a corner when we're flying to all of our appointments to just kind of like not be seen because,
you know, I don't deal know, with
I don't know if I'm making people uncomfortable or, you know, like, you know, they don't know, you know, when she's screaming and she can't talk and I have a CVI video in front of her. It's like, I don't, you know, I don't want their judgment, I guess, is another thing. Like, I just, please don't judge me. but having him just talk to me was so kind. And he just brought it up just by her AFOs. Tell me about those. What are those? What are they for? You know, and it just, and then he like wanted to upgrade us to first class. And I'm like, it's a flight from Bozeman to Denver. You don't have to do that. But, you know, what a kind gesture. And just like him just talking to me in that moment was just, it was very kind. And I didn't, I never realized how much I maybe needed that.
Well, it's interesting because he was curious. And that's all he was. And he wanted to just talk to you about it. And the thing is, everyone's curious. But we jump to this place of shame for some reason. Like we feel like it's taboo to broach the subject or and then that makes moms feel like they have to hide. Because since you can't talk about your kiddo as if it's something to be ashamed of, right, or hide, or try to make more, you know, like acceptable to the general mm-hmm. public, mm-hmm. then it implies that like you don't have a right to talk about it,
right,
or something.
Right. Well, and there are those awkward moments, like, because oftentimes I fly by myself and I'm in a, like trying to eat really quick mm-hmm. and somebody's sitting next to me and they'll just glance over and I'll be giving Ainsley a bottle and I'll be like, oh, hi, sorry if I'm bugging you. My daughter has a metabolic disorder. Like I just automatically just lead with right. that. Like I'm explaining this to you because
yes.
I'm sure
right.
I would have the same question. Like I would be like, oh, why are they still feeding her with a bottle? And
right.
why isn't she walking and talking? And you know, yeah. so like I lead with that and it's like, oh my gosh, Ashley, like I'm like, what are you doing? Just
yeah.
But I'm like trying to bail them out too right. a little bit.
Totally.
You know,
that makes sense. But and you shouldn't have to do that. That's kind of the point. I mean,
I
but
know.
It just is.
Yeah.
It is. It, and,
yes.
And I think I would probably be
right.
the same way just
yeah.
because then you don't have to deal with wondering uh-huh. what are they
exactly.
thinking.
Exactly. And that's, and yeah. that alleviates it for me. Yeah. It's like, well, now they know.
Now they know.
I can
and so now,
my sandwich.
Now if they want to judge, it's
yes.
totally
yeah.
on them
yeah.
and it isn't
yeah.
anything about
exactly.
Yeah. yeah.
But I will say kids.
Yes.
Oh, little honeys. They're so sweet and innocent and they like their true curiosity. They're not scared to ask anything.
Right.
I mean, Ainsley's been in my classroom a few times and I love their questions. Like I love their curiosity and they point blank say, you know, their first question, how old is she? 3. Well, why isn't she walking?
Right.
You know, first question. And
right.
And it's fine.
Yeah.
Why isn't she walking?
Right.
Let's talk about it.
Right.
And, you know, for the longest time I was saying, well, she has just a special kind of brain and, you know, she hasn't learned it. She might eventually learn how to walk. But right now, like her muscles and her brain, just they aren't necessarily working together. And, you know, it's okay. She's just a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought this special brain thing was so perfect. And then Barrett one day, you know, he had asked and he doesn't ask very often. Like we make her so normal. Mm-hmm. Like it is our normal. So when people come into our world, it's like, oh yeah, this isn't what you do every day.
Right.
Oh, sorry. You know, so for yeah. Barrett, when he asked and I was like, oh honey, she just has a special brain. And he's like, well, and he said, isn't my brain special? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't say that anymore. Cause yes, your brain is special. So, you know, then I have to like rephrase that to kids. Cause you know, immediately I'm like, there's my 5-year-old calling me on my,
right.
you know,
yeah.
letting me know like, hey, my brain is special too, mom.
Right.
You know, so, but when kids come up and ask, you know, it's usually like a, you know, their attention span is like a minute. So uh-huh. it's like, you have like a minute conversation.
Yeah.
And they're moving on.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's all they need to hear is, you know, she's just a little bit different and, you know, she might eventually walk, but if she doesn't, that's okay. And, you know, we have our wheelchair housed at the preschool. It's just easier for us to get around with a stroller still. And, you know, so I think having a wheelchair would maybe be a little bit easier just because people then see the wheelchair, you know,
right.
like, oh, she can't walk,
yeah.
you know. But I think the best part is like kids are just so honest and they're not scared to ask those questions. And, you know, I've never had an instant out in public where a child has asked with their parent, but I know immediately a parent would be like, oh, you know,
right.
they'd try to stop them.
Yeah.
And it's like, don't stop them.
Yeah.
It's okay to be curious. Like this is great exposure
yeah.
for them. And I mean, that's something we've always said about Barrett is like, I think that's part of why he is just this yeah. kind little soul is, you know, our goal for Ainsley is she experiences joy every day and we love on her. And he is just like the most loving little brother ever. And he'll play with her as best he can and just is so sweet and kind. But, you know, he recognizes kids that maybe might be different,
right?
But he's actually kind of drawn to them too.
I bet.
You know, like he's, oh my gosh, this kiddo is so cool, mom.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of, he's so much smaller, but he's just so sweet and so cute. And I gave him a hug at recess, you know, and
yeah.
I just, it's like, oh, thank goodness. Like yeah. we need more of you in the world,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I think kids are just the most genuine question askers,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it is just their curiosity and it's, not very many of them stick around long enough to, or have very many questions. They just want to kind of know why, and you tell them and they're good with that. Mm-hmm. We're good.
Yeah.
You know, and I last year up at the ski hill, one of my old students, she's a third grader now. And I told her mom, I'm like, she is such a doll, like so sweet. But she was sitting with me and I had Ainsley at the picnic table and was giving her a bottle. And this girl is just asking me all sorts of questions because I had had her the year before, or maybe the year. Yeah. The year before I had her in class. And she's just like asking me all these questions. Like, she doesn't talk, she doesn't walk, you feed her with a bottle, like, you know, does she practice these things? And I'm like, oh yeah, she goes to therapy 3 times a week. Like, we have speech and OT and PT, she does it all. And this little girl looks at me and she's like, that must be really hard.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, well, yeah, it is sometimes.
Yeah.
And I just am like, how are you, you little human, 8 years old?
Right.
That must be really hard.
Yeah. That empathy.
And I just told, and her parents are amazing. And I told her mom, and I'm like, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Cause look at this. Yeah. Like, I just, like, for a kid to say that
and to have, like, it be so natural.
Yeah. Like, so sincere.
Yeah.
So like, huh.
That's cool.
And I'm like, I love you, little honey. And I still, like, she still comes and visits me and all the things, and
yeah,
just so sweet. But I think, we have to be okay with people asking questions.
Yeah.
And I'd rather have somebody nonchalantly start with the AFOs.
Yeah.
And you'll get it all. You know, because that's an easy thing to just be like, tell me about those.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah.
And it's okay to not. It is okay. It's okay for people to be uncomfortable and not really know what to say.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, like, I mean, I told you before, I still don't know. You don't have to say anything, but I think like the staring.
Right.
I'd rather have you just
come
talk to me.
Right.
I'm a mom.
Yeah.
Let's talk mom stuff.
Yeah.
I can chat and hold her or feed her at the same time.
Right.
And hearing other mom's stories like that, it's a beautiful thing.
Right.
Because we all have one.
Yeah.
We really do.
Yeah, it's true.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, we have to wrap up soon,
okay,
but I want you to just leave us with, like, you know, if there are other moms or other family members listening who are in a similar kind of story and situation, I guess, what would you offer to them? Like, what's hopeful for you on your hardest days, Ashley?
Oh, you just have to give yourself grace.
Yeah.
I mean, perfection just is this thing that we put in front of us, and it just, you create your own perfection.
Yeah.
You know, and embracing just the little moments and focusing on that, like the little successes. If, like, all you did in the day was, you know, fix your hair or not, or you showered, that's a win. You know, some days it's just the smallest things, and it will get better. But you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
You have to. And really, the people that are closest to you, whether you want to admit it or not, they know you, and you have to be open to what they say sometimes. And that's hard. That's really hard, but it can, and it will get better. And there are so many bright spots along the way. There really are.
Yeah.
There really, really are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, love.
Yeah. No, thank you.
That was so good. Yeah.
Oh,
and
you.
I just know everyone's going to appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
Mother Love is hosted by Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, the Montana Coalition, a nonprofit organization dedicated to the health and well-being of families who are expecting or raising little ones. Opinions and views expressed in these interviews do not necessarily represent the views of HMHB as an organization. We sincerely value the lived experiences shared on Mother Love, and we understand that not everyone will agree with or relate to all of what is shared. Mother Love exists to help our guests and listeners honor and embrace their own stories and experiences. If the content in this episode has caused you concern or distress, please reach out to someone you trust for support. Speaking up about our struggles is half the battle, sometimes more than half, and there are many providers who can and want to help. Visit our statewide online resource guide at www.hmhb-lifts.org to help you find resources in your area.
Thank you to our incredible editor and producer, Brooke Boone Miller, for sharing her gifts with us. She's a mom, and she gets it, and for that we are so grateful.